This is the Craig Charles Show, BBC Radio 6 Music. Hold my calls. I'm joined by Scottish singer, songwriter, and recent inductee to the Hot 100 Scottish Cultural Personalities of 2024, Hamish Hawke. Are you there?
I am here. Hello, hello, Craig. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Where is there, Hamish?
I am here in Edinburgh, and it is absolutely frozen solid. My goodness me. I am freezing, but, you know, I'm powering through.
Listen, in my introduction, I said the Hot 100 Scottish Cultural Personalities of 2024.
Yeah, apparently, yeah.
How does that make you feel, getting a kind of accolade like that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the past, I would say the past few years, the past 3 years for the band and I have, you know, it's completely transformed what our lives look like, you know, and for most of our 20s, you know, the music was something that we did. It was really our passion, but it was something that we did on the side of everything else. Mm. I'd say that over the past 3-4 years, it's become the thing that we do. And as I say, it's such a privilege when your passion becomes the thing that you do and becomes your career. But it's, you know, it's no small amount, bewildering in places. And especially to talk like people, to people like yourself in situations like this, it is, it can be quite bewildering, but, no, it's an absolute honor. And we're just so thrilled to be doing it and loving every minute, really.
2024 was a busy year for you. What were the highlights?
Yeah, God. I mean, the thing is, yeah, I would say it was so early in the year, but I'd better say it was the playing the Barrowland Ballroom in Glasgow in February. It's just, you know, I grew up going to gigs at the Barrowlands, and, you know, it's the kind of stage that really transforms acts and transforms the room. You know, like when you go and see a band there, it's just such a magic space, and whoever's performing, their performance just takes on a whole other, I don't know, it just takes on a whole other character. And it's a bit of a mystical space for me. So yeah, I absolutely love playing the Barrowlands in February. It was the biggest headline show we'd done to date. And let's hope we can follow up this year. We've got some big gigs coming up, so I'm hoping I can fill those boots, you know.
You used to work in a record shop, didn't you?
I did, yeah. Worked in Assai Records here in Edinburgh for a good 5-6 years.
What did you love most about working in a record shop?
I would say, especially nowadays when a lot of us are listening to a lot of music streamed or sort of on the go, I would say something that I really treasured about working in a record shop is just how many times you would listen to a record in its entirety and how well you would get to know a record. Mm. Even if it was something classic, even if it's something that you've listened to hundreds of times before, there's something about just, you know, because you might only have a limited number of records like in the playlist, say, that you can sort of take out of their packaging and put on, take out of their sleeve and put on the turntable. And so you would end up listening to a handful of records so many times. And that sounds like it might be, that might be a bit of a, I don't know, that might be a bit tedious, but, you know, you just really get into records, and especially when it's new releases as well, you can really sink your teeth into them before most people have. And that was a real joy. So I would say that was the highlight for me.
Mm. Listen, you've supported Travis, Villagers, yeah, Elbow recently. What's been your most memorable onstage moment thus far, apart from the Barrowlands?
Oh God, whatever in my life.
Yeah, ever in your whole entire life.
Ever in my life, my goodness. I must say, off the top of my head, it's difficult to think of a particular time where it was like, that was it, you know? Mm. But I would say when the band and I first started touring properly, you know, as I say, 3-4 years ago, it was when, you know, the crowd started singing the lyrics back to us. And that just felt like, you know, I just felt like, surely these people can't know these words, but they do. And now it's more commonplace, but you don't, or at least I don't really get used to it. And I'm kind of glad I'm not getting used to it, because I take every moment. I try not to take anything for granted. And I'm just still so hugely grateful of how everything's going.
Your album, A Fair My Hand, dropped in August last year. I mean, the response has been incredible. That surprise you? And also, what was the process of making the album like?
It surprised me in that I would say the writing process for A Firmer Hand, for this record, was probably like the most involved it's ever been for me. It was the most deeply personal. It was the most personally revealing. And, you know, I'm someone who believes that, you know, for me, the song is the be all and end all. There was never going to be a song that I wrote that I would be, that I would stop from being released, that I would go, oh, you know, that's too personal or too private or too difficult, too naughty in somewhere, in some way. I would always think, well, regardless of all of that, regardless of how it makes me feel, I'm always going to put it out. You know, it's really important to me. I'm sort of, I would say I'm maybe sort of a diarist when it comes to writing. It's quite a therapizing process for me writing a song.
I mean, talking about diaries, you've said the album is a diary of your relationships with men.
Yeah.
Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah. Well, so a few years ago, there was a song on one of my previous records called Heavy Elevator. The song was called Bakerloo Unbecoming. And in that, there was a lyric that's, if I remember it correctly, it was essentially it comes down again to the limitless mysteries of other men. Mm-hmm. And when I wrote that, I sort of thought, oh, that's okay, right? Okay, that's interesting. But I'll maybe put that aside for now. Maybe that's not to be, I'm not to excavate that in this song. And I wasn't necessarily excavating it in that album or even the follow-up. But then with a firmer hand, the first couple of songs I wrote for the album, it was suddenly front and center. These, as I say, these relationships with men, whether it was colleagues or lovers or, you know, people you work with, people you know, people from your past, family members, whoever it might be, people in the street, people you sit next to on a park bench or whatever. It was suddenly front and center. And I thought, okay, this is where I'm going to go into this. And it just became the focal point for the whole record. Every song seemed to just pull from that center, you know. And it started to feel like, well, you know, I could try and resist this and make the album into something else, but that just felt like a completely, you know, that felt like a some travesty. So I thought, no, I need to lean further into it. And so the album became this kind of, yeah, it was all in the one theme. It became this little I don't know, this collage of sorts.
Your latest single, Disingenuous, tell us, yeah, about that track.
Well, so Disingenuous, yeah. So I'm very I really like Disingenuous. I think, well, as a performer, I must say, as a live performer, it's a really thrilling song to sing. It's a really thrilling song to perform. It was one of the most difficult on the record to fully realize, I would say. There tends to be a song that appears on each record that just, instead of landing on your plate as one big whole, and instead of landing in two halves over a couple of days, there are these songs that you just have to chisel away at for weeks on end. And that's what just Disingenuous was. And so really, as much as it's about a few things, I would say principally Disingenuous is a song inevitably about writing songs.
Should we listen to it?
Yeah, let's go for it.
This is Hamish Hawke, Disingenuous. That was Disingenuous by Hamish Hawke. He is my guest. You have a beautiful speaking voice, Hamish. It sounds almost trained. Did you ever think about going down the acting route at all, or anything like that?
Well, first of all, thank you very much, Craig. That's very kind of you to say. But I did. I acted a bit at school. And I did apply for drama school when I was but a youngster, and they turned me down.
Oh, rejection. You've got to get used to that as an actor.
I know, we'll see, maybe it's their loss, but, well, no, that's what I'd say. But, I did think about it, and, you know, it's something that might, well, I would like to think that there's other avenues that might rear their heads in the next few years, but, I think the thing that it always came down to for me is, you know, especially going back to words, it's such a joy to be able, and such a privilege to be able to sing or speak your own words on stage. Have people come and be interested enough to listen to them or to pay to hear them. It's, as I say, these songs are my diaries and therefore very personal to me. And so it's very, as I say, affirming, or just, it's just incredibly rewarding to be able to sing my own words. And so that is, I suppose, something you trade off being an actor. And for now I'll stick to, well, my own words for now.
Talking about that, I'm sorry if this is a bit left field. Who would you want to play you in a movie?
Oh, don't even. Well, you know what? Someone said to me not too long ago, if you look up young Christopher Walken, I have been told that I have...
I can see that.
There's a likeness there. And you know what? I love Christopher Walken, so I'm happy to say Chris Walken. Let's go for him.
I can see that. I really can.
He's significantly older. So he'll have to be this kind of sort of Benjamin Button version. I think that could go down well.
He's you looking back on his career, you know.
Yes, there we go.
There you go.
You can write the screenplay.
Because you have quite an androgynous sort of, almost kind of new romantic look in your sort of artwork, if you know what I mean.
Oh, thanks. Oh, well, that's a compliment and a half. Thank you. I would say I agree.
Listen, your singing voice has been compared to Neil Hannon, Scott Walker, Morrissey even. Have these guys been an influence to you? And who were your influences growing up?
Yeah, no, without doubt, yeah. I would say it was anyone who could turn a word and turn it into something else, you know? And from that foundation, I just went off in lots of different directions, I suppose. And you're right in say Scott Walker, big crooners, big characters, big voices, high drama voices. Mm. I think it was, you know, talking about, I've never been trained. My voice has never been trained. I've never done any kind of singing lessons or anything like that. And if you'd asked me a few years ago, I would never have even thought of myself as a singer. I would have, at a push, thought of myself as a musician. It was never an asset that I considered to be in any way valuable. It's only in the past couple of years that I've felt sort of, I don't know, supported enough or encouraged enough to really push my voice and really sing.
Now listen, you're on tour again in February. What can people expect and where can people catch it?
Yeah, so we're all up and down the UK in February. We're starting, so it starts on February the 9th in Aberdeen, and then we move down to the north of England, Manchester, Newcastle. We're playing Cardiff in Wales. We're playing Southwest, Bristol, London, Birmingham, and then we're playing Leeds as well, Nottingham, and finishing up at the Usher Hall in Edinburgh. And we're really excited about it. I think to have the songs that we've got from the past three albums all sort of coming together in the one set, it's going to be, yeah, I'm thrilled to be setting off on tour, and I really hope people can come, because I do think we're going to treat them to a rare good show, dare I say.
You have a good one, Hamish. Thanks for talking to us.